This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
Nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
One of my regrets actually now, we should have pulled the plug sooner.
It's amazing when the universe sees you commit, how all of a sudden all these resources start to come together.
Thanks for joining us. And now, How Success Happens.
If you had a client list studded with A-listers, would that mean that you've made it? If you streamed one of the world's biggest movie stars bungee jumping into the Grand Canyon, would you consider yourself successful then? If you could rack up 12 million YouTube views in less than 24 hours, would that be a reasonable marker for success? I'm video producer Conrad Martin, and in this episode of How Success Happens, I speak with Eric Conti and Dan Weinrich, the creative minds behind Content 23. A full-service production company that's worked with Lady Gaga, Jay-Z, Donald Glover, and a bunch of other names that I'll let them speak to. I asked Eric and Dan how they got to where they are now, what it takes to lead a team to victory, and where you go from the top, or even if there is one. We'll get right into it after this word.
Have questions about starting and running your own business or managing work-life balance? Book a one-on-one session with experienced business owners and media experts and get the answers you need. Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, can help perfect your business pitch to the media. Financial advisor Brittany Castro can help you understand and balance your business financials. And social media expert John Horowitz can help improve your social marketing strategies. So what are you waiting for? Book your one-on-one session with Entrepreneur's lineup of experts today. Visit entrepreneur.com/expert. Again, that's entrepreneur.com/expert.
Who are you and what do you do?
We are Eric Conti.
And Dan Weinrich.
Of Content 23 Media, a full service production company. We specialize in live events, branded content, live streams, award shows, and marketing.
And Will Smith jumping out of a helicopter.
All right.
Good? Are you happy with that one?
I like the first one better.
So, do you want to do it one more time?
One more time.
Give him one more.
Go for it.
My name is Dan Weinrich.
And I am Eric Conti. We are the two principals of Content 23 Media, a full-service production company specializing in award shows, live streams, branded content, and experiential marketing.
That was great. I think that was the one.
That was a keeper.
I think that was the one. So my questions kind of start where you guys met. And as far as I know, that's met at Viacom. Getting to Viacom is a success in and of itself. So can you each give me like a 60-second fast-forward version of like your life from like school to how you got into the doors of Viacom? Like what led you there?
I went to Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York. I knew I wanted to get a job as soon as I got out of college. Second semester, senior year, I got an internship at MTV. I started in MTV News Latin America, and halfway through my internship, the entire department got liquidated. So that was a real kind of baptism by fire of how the media business works. Nothing is guaranteed. There is no such thing as job security. So I saw very quickly how fast things can change. I was repositioned as an intern to the production department. I did my best there, and I was able to parlay that to a entry-level job as soon as I graduated that spring.
I'm pretty sure that was more than 60 seconds. Do I get the extra time, too?
I mean, you take all the time you need.
No, I'm just kidding. I always wanted to go into film, and out of college, I was interning for Green Renzi Productions, which is a production company shared by Maggie Renzi, who produces all of John Sayles' films, and Sarah Green, who produces all of David Mamet's films. And I was interning there for a few months out of college when a friend of a friend who worked at MTV, I had invited him to the Film Forum to see a 20th anniversary remastered screening of the film Brazil. A week later, the guy who I invited to see the movie with me, he was promoted from a PA, a production assistant, to a senior PA, and he needed to hire a production assistant, and I must have been in the front of his mind because of this movie experience we had. But I, at the meantime, was interning at a film company, which is what I thought I wanted to do. He offered me the job, and I was very hesitant, and then the people I was interning for were like, you should go, because we're not going to be paying you anytime soon. And MTV is going to be a great experience, and it was. What they didn't tell me was that once I went down a sort of TV production road,
It's a completely different lane.
I probably wasn't going to be bouncing back and forth between that and film. But in any case, that's how I ended up at MTV, and that's where I met Eric.
The first time you guys met. Tell us about the moment.
Oh, it was magic. It was a half moon. We were standing by the garden. No, you know, we graduated from college the same year. Am I allowed to say, Eric?
Yeah.
1998.
Ouch.
So we started at MTV. I mean, really, we were lucky. How success happened for us was that we were lucky to work at MTV at a really robust creative time. They were creating 24 hours of original programming, and we were basically Permalance production PAs and eventually APs, and Eric eventually became a senior vice president. I moved over to BET and was a producer there with 106 and Park, but we were like, our job was just, you know, from month to month, we just went from show to show as MTV was trying out all these sort of new narrative concepts, and it was a real amazing trial by fire, right?
Yeah, I remember we met, you know, on the 23rd floor at MTV's headquarters at 1515. We kind of hit it off right away. We had similar, you know, interest in music. We had a lot of the same friends in common, just coincidentally, and we just kind of hit it off as friends. We actually had a friendly rivalry where a lot of times we were competing for the same projects or trying to like compare paychecks or trying to like really, you know, one up each other in the day to day. But it was always friendly.
And we didn't compete over jobs. Like we both wanted each, but we both always had a job was our situation, I think, right? No?
You said to me, I bet you $100 you're working for me before I work for you.
I did?
Yes. We were PAs.
I guess I owe you $100. You hired me before I hired you.
Call it even. Moving on.
The first collaboration that you guys were always going to be working together.
To be honest with you, that was a gradual process. I don't think we knew that we would always be working together on one particular project. You know, we did one together and it was successful and we kept going and we continued to have success, and I think our confidence in our partnership grew. So it's hard to pinpoint one specific time, but I will tell you that when we became partners, it was right around, I mean, here's what happened. I became a freelance producer. I worked at BET, VH1, and sometimes would go back to MTV. Eric stayed at MTV. And as he became an executive, he was often one of the first people I would look for to get hired. So that's what I meant about him winning that bet. But I found that when I worked for Eric, he pushed me to make a better product as a producer, as a writer, as an editor, than I would have made without his presence. And sometimes it was annoying because, you know, I definitely, particularly in my younger years, was a little bit of a, you know, good time guy and wasn't really trying to put in extra hours at work. I was, you know, trying to kind of get out of there with maybe the least amount of effort. Eric sort of brought out the best in me. So years later, when he finally decided to leave Viacom as a full-time employee, I had had a sort of middling third-party company for 10 years since I first started working at BET when I was 23. I would get label jobs and I would produce little shows for them, vignettes, things for as DVD extras, what have you. And the company never really took off. And I felt like, you know, if I partner with Eric, our shows are going to be better, and we're going to get more shows, and our company will grow. So, like, it's worth sort of giving up half of what I have to partner up with Eric because I'm not going anywhere on my own. That was my perspective.
As usual, Dan's being a little bit too modest here. So when we, you know, maybe after like, you know, 2 years of our friendship, this is, you know, back years ago, Dan was hired as one of the first producers for BET's flagship show, 106 and Park. Big show, shiny floor, daily live production. Some of the biggest names in music would come to that studio. And Dan produced the first 500 episodes of that show. And I was still like a junior producer at the time. And I was so envious and impressed and proud of his success that he had at BET. So that was always fantastic to see that success that he had. And I stayed at Viacom, and I had my own success there too when I was on the at MTV. But so whenever I would hire in a freelance producer after Dan had left BET, he was always my first choice. I knew his experience, I knew his capabilities, I knew his creative skills that he brought to the table. So whenever I needed to bring in a producer to a project that I was working on overseeing, he was always top of the list for me. And sometimes I'd get him, and sometimes I couldn't get him on board. But to Dan's point, when I left MTV, I knew two things. I knew, one, it's very hard to be a solo act in the TV business, right? Having a partnership and having someone you can trust and turn to, it's incredible. Like, you double your bandwidth, you double your manpower, you double your networking, your contacts, and the amount of work you can get done in a single day. But also, like, I knew, like, he was the one and only call I made. I left Viacom, and I called Dan. I said, hey, listen, I'm leaving. We should work together. And he was like, I'm having a baby, but as soon as that's done, I'm in. And within, like, I think 2 months, Dan called me with a project that he had just landed. It was a music documentary, modest budget, and we hit the ground running. And it came out fantastic, but the most important thing was the process was good. We liked working together. We liked collaborating. It was never a tit for tat of, hey, how much work are you doing versus what I'm doing, or how do we split this? It was collaborative. And it never felt competitive. And it felt like, I trust him, I trust this. And doing the next one was never questioned. It was like, let's just keep this thing moving. And it's been great ever since.
Did anything change for you? Like, between the moment where you made it, like, official, do you have, like, a contract or anything that you guys have ever signed? Or has everything pretty much changed?
We're probably a very bad example for all your listeners here, because we really just have a handshake agreement all these years still. I mean, we probably need to update that as we're, like, starting to entertain offers of people wanting to buy the company.
Yeah.
Because it'd be a shame if, we weren't fair with each other and I had to murder you.
Yeah, that'd be unfortunate. My kids understand, though.
So, but that's a key to finding a partner. You need somebody that you not only trust implicitly, but who you also believe brings a value that you don't necessarily have, so that, you're not questioning, like, why am I doing this?
Yeah, and I think if we had to keep turning back to a document to, like, point out to a contract, well, this says this and this says that, like, I feel like that's not really how we operate. I mean, we'll get there one day, but I feel like we're fully transparent. We're in each other's documents and bank accounts, and like it's all there laid out. And there aren't really too many secrets that we don't know about each other on a personal, professional level. So it's kind of, we spend a lot of time together. I'll put it that way.
If you've had any experiences like I've had, you've seen Dan in his underwear enough times.
Yeah, well, that's another podcast.
To last you a lifetime. Yeah.
Guys, I'm not sure.
We can cut it all out.
Direction.
You both have very different personalities. Can you speak about a time where you've had to balance your different personalities and like where either they've maybe even conflicted and like what your resolution for that was?
I'll say this about like conflicts and how we work out in the partnership. We were on a production recently. I was talking to Ron DeMarais, the director for the Will Smith project, and I was explaining to him how we work. And I'm like, Dan may see things one way and I may see things completely different. We never compromise. It's never like, all right, we'll just meet halfway in the middle. We have a habit of basically working through everything until either I'll see it his way or he'll see it my way. But it's never like, okay, I give up. Let's just meet halfway in the middle. Like one of us is probably right, and we just will talk it through and argue it and debate and figure out what the right answer is, not what the compromise is. And not that compromise is a bad word, but we don't like to settle. And we know that, like, between our experience and our skills, the right answer is in there somewhere, and we get to it.
There must always be a winner and a loser.
Is it a matter of ever removing like the emotional element from it, or like the personal attachment that you might have to an idea, or does that not even?
Yeah, sometimes you have to sort of snap yourself out of that. When we do a show, I typically author the rundowns, which is sort of like the outline of what's going to happen in the show and the timings. And as you work on this document, it goes through many, many versions. You start to take a certain ownership, and sometimes Eric has to snap me out of it when he wants to change something, or maybe not even he wants to change it, other circumstances, whether it be talent commitment, and you have to remind yourself like that it's not actually your child.
Yeah,
you're not actually cutting a finger off your child when you switch around the format of a show, because you get very personally vested. So that's another reason it's great to have a partner that you trust, like we do, each other, because
Sometimes we have to sort of snap each other out of it.
I might have an idea I think is the funniest thing ever or the coolest idea, and then Dana, I'm like, no, it's dumb. And I'll be like, we'll talk it through. I'm like, okay, you're right. And vice versa. I'm like, Dana, that's not going to work. And if we talk it through and kind of like close our eyes and visualize and hold hands, like, okay, this is what it's actually going to be like. It's like, okay, you're right. And we find the right answer along the way. But one piece of advice to your point, Conrad, about like taking things personally, that's one of the biggest pieces of advice I can give to anybody in the creative business is like, there comes a point where you have to let go. Like nothing's more frustrating as, you know, as an executive or as a producer, you walk into an edit and you try to give notes, you try to give feedback to a writer on the script. It's like everything can't be a debate. Okay, like if I give a note or if I have a creative change, I can't battle every single step of the way. So like if I'm gonna come in with some feedback, I expect the person to take it, and they can kind of like fight me, pick their battles here and there. But it is exhausting sometimes. People do not know when to say when. And on the flip side, I've had to learn that, you know, like if I get notes, take them. You know, it's part of the process, and like you can push back here and there, but like nobody wants to be argued with every step of the way. And that's a big, big learning curve, I think, for a lot of people in the creative business.
Right, and catering. I mean, even as an entrepreneur, like that's a big part of it. I know a lot of businesses just fail just because they can't get past like their own things that they're holding on to.
Particularly in our field, you're going to be dealing with all kinds of clients and who are difficult and don't really understand your process, and you have to, you know, over-explain what every cost is and why it's there, and you have to have the patience of a saint sometimes.
But yeah, it's a balancing act too, because I feel like a lot of times, you know, like clients will come to us for our creative expertise and our skills, and they do want us to lay out the best creative visions for them, and we do that, and we're happy to do that. But sometimes it's strictly in an execution capacity, and I feel like in those situations, we have to know when to kind of speak up and kind of share what we think is a good idea, make a recommendation, but also know when to let it go and kind of read the tea leaves. Okay, listen, we said our piece. They want to do it their way. We have to move on. And it can't be personal. We can't be, you know, spidey about it. Just move on.
Those are all steps towards the ultimate goal, which is like the win. What do you guys define as like the ultimate win? What's success for you guys?
We haven't experienced it yet. And then that's part of our secret is that we're both, you know, we're very ambitious and we're always striving to improve and expand.
One of the greatest things for us is breaking new business, right? Landing new clients, going in there, shaking the hand, and getting new business that we didn't have 6 months ago is huge. It's fantastic. Re-upping an existing client is fantastic because it means they like what you're doing and it's working and they trust you and they want to grow and they want to build. Doing products that are bigger and bigger and kind of like always kind of setting new goals of like, oh, here's what we want to go hit from a revenue standpoint. Here's what I want to get from a number of clients standpoint. Here's what I want to get from a creative standpoint. And surpassing those and always being excited about going to work and always feeling like there is so much potential and there is so many, like there's, and like you know, every time you scratch off one goal, you want to set three more and hit those and cross those off and land new ones.
Do you have to be or have an entrepreneurial spirit in order to make it in media, do you think?
I don't know to make it in media necessarily, but if you want to have your own company, I think you'd probably have to have an entrepreneurial spirit in any field. But yeah, I mean, if we didn't have entrepreneurial spirits, our partnership would not have lasted because we both get offers all the time to go work as you know, freelancers or even
consultants,
staffers.
Sure.
And, we turn them down because we have a thriving business that we need to run and we're not trying to abandon it for, you know, some sort of corporate individual achievement, but not only that, it's because we're committed to what we're building together, and not to be too braggadocious, but we've had really incredible success. I mean, we partnered together seven years ago, and we now have a company that is. You know, we're more successful now than we ever were in 20 years working for other people, put it that way.
Your latest, greatest success?
Well, we just did a job for Oprah.
Oprah?
That's for the big O.
Tell me.
We did a little project for Oprah's Favorite Things. We sort of ran around the country at her behest.
A year ago, we met a friend of ours who worked for OWN, for OWN. And we said, oh, we should work together. We had a few phone calls and false starts, never actually panned out. This December, about a week and a half before Christmas, she calls us on a Tuesday.
Eric and Dan, we have to shoot at five businesses that are on Oprah's favorite things list, so five new businesses that are across the country. It was Tuesday. We need you guys to shoot in five cities by Friday. So that was a Tuesday morning. We had to shoot that day for another client. Long story short, the next morning, Dan was at JFK heading to San Diego, and I was at JFK flying to Minneapolis and then Dallas. We shot at five cities in 2.5 days, and it was awesome. But like we relished those opportunities to show new clients what we can do,
yeah.
And also like you know what's fun for us is also finding like who else is out there that we haven't worked with yet that we're excited to work with. You mm-hmm. know, like from a stature standpoint, it was working with Oprah is fantastic.
I want to segue into the Will Smith project. I want to know how you guys got him to jump out of a helicopter, how you captured it, how that deal came to you, and where it landed you as far as success is concerned.
The genesis was he wanted to jump out of a helicopter. He was actually challenged by a group of YouTubers named Yes Theory to jump out
Great
of a
guys.
Helicopter. And he decided that he wanted to jump out of a helicopter over the Grand Canyon, bungee jump, I should say, out of a helicopter over the Grand Canyon on his 50th birthday, live on his YouTube
Raising
channel.
Raising the stakes.
Right. So YouTube, very excited to get behind this event. They signed on, but their caveat was that he needed a team that had some live event experience to pull it off. So that's where we came in. Eric had the year before produced a 4-day live stunt for YouTube called Katy Perry Witness Worldwide, where basically Katy Perry sort of did a Big Brother setup for a few days leading to a concert where she had all these cameras set up in her house and was live on her YouTube channel 24 hours a day for
yeah,
4 days straight.
It was the production company was called Fly in the Wall. They do Big Brother, and they are the experts in hidden camera, robo camera. Obviously, they did that show on a daily basis. So we rigged 40-something robo lock-off cameras around an apartment in downtown Los Angeles for Katy Perry. And she was literally live for 4 days straight, morning, noon, and night. There was nowhere to go except from the bathroom was the only place that actually didn't have a camera in it.
And it was, what was the show? I remember there was some distinction. Was it like Time's Top 10 Shows of the Year?
Oh, yeah. It won all kinds of accolades. It had 75 million views in the first, 48 hours. It was an absolute hit. Katie was a blast to work with.
So it was a no-brainer the next year when YouTube Originals was going for their next big sort of shot with Will Smith that they would want to bring Eric in, and this time he brought me along for the ride too. And so we produced that YouTube event, which was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, when you get the phone call, hey, Will Smith is going to jump out of a helicopter over the Grand Canyon, you're like, well, there's nothing really bigger than that. That's like, it's huge. There's no way you can't do it. So it was a thrill to work on. Will was fantastic. His team was fantastic. All the guys over there at Westbrook were great.
And in case you're wondering, even us TV guys who are used to working with celebrities, it was, I had the pleasure to work probably the closest directly with Will. And, yeah, to sit in a room with Will and Alfonso Rivera, I mean, they're a couple years older than me, so I grew up watching Fresh Prince, right?
Of course, yeah, I mean, we all did.
So here I am sitting with Will and Carlton, except it's real life. and they're consulting with me.
Hey, would this work? Is this cool? How did that sound?
Yeah. And I'm telling Will and Carlton what our plan is.
Yeah.
And... yeah, it's a trip. It's unbelievable. I mean, I'm not ashamed to say it was pretty awesome.
That's one of the great things I think about what we do and just being in that line of work is that like it never gets boring, right? Like, I have friends in all kinds of businesses and they're like, wow, like they can't believe it. And like every day is different, It's like we could be, on a shoot at a record studio, we could be on a movie set, we could be at the Grand Canyon. It's always something different. There's always different creative and logistic challenges behind each project, which always keeps it fun and gives you a chance to kind of like reinvent things every time you're out there.
What were the biggest challenges that you had with Will Smith? Like the project, not with Will.
I mean, we basically had to build a gigantic production compound in the desert. You're shooting at the Grand Canyon. You are an hour and a half away from the nearest you know, Kinko's or Staples or Hotel, which is in Flagstaff. You're an hour and a half away. So, you know, basically bringing in, you know, everything you need from broadcast to transmission to Wi-Fi to electricity. There's nothing there. There's nothing to plug into. That was huge. I think, you know, really trying to find a way to, and this is kind of, you know, part of what our secret sauce is to a certain extent is, like, I hate to say it, we work with big talent a lot. So whether it's Katy Perry or Lady Gaga or Jay-Z or Madonna or Will, when you work with talent that size, you kind of just hold on for the ride in a lot of ways. Where, like, they've gotten to that point of success because they do things their way, and you can affect things only to a certain extent. So basically trying to take their vision and make it work and manage the budget, any third parties that are involved, whether it's a record label, the broadcast network, et cetera, and try to bring all these groups on board and say, this is what the final product is going to look like, because this is what Lady Gaga wants, or this is what, you know, Katy Perry wants. It's really kind of bringing it all together and selling in one unified vision so that the final product is awesome.
Now, it doesn't always work out, though, that way, right? Even all the planning in the world, and it might not happen. So when we were actually on set, what happened before the jump?
One of our mottos is no surprises. Okay, so we plan everything out. We rehearse like crazy. We have multiple redundancies put in place so that we have a plan for just about every scenario, right? We don't like to be, you know, we don't like to walk on set and just kind of like go for the ride. We know what's going to happen, and we thought it all through.
And also the idea is, particularly with live events, is you're always going to have things that you have to improvise with, or details that are, you know, curveballs. Mm. So you should button up absolutely everything you can to make room for the unexpected curveballs.
Right.
Because if you have variables going into a live event, you're going to be overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So, in that instance, we had this, like, basically terrible sort of hailstorm the day before we were supposed to live stream. And we couldn't do the test jump. So if that had been the jump day, Will's jump would have been canceled because it was scheduled for the afternoon. Because one of the biggest challenges that Eric left out about this is that it was legitimately Will's 50th birthday. And he was throwing himself a birthday party. He had about, you know, I don't know, 75 or 80 of his closest family and friends. They were being flown in by helicopter. They had this, like, amazing makeshift couture, like, tent with, like, you know, of course. I mean, you know, Will Smith is not going to have a taco truck at his 50th birthday, right? Or if he is, it's going to be the best taco truck you ever tasted.
Amazing tacos.
But, I mean, the point is, there was a lot going on, and basically what we had to do is we had to go convince Will we have to shoot early in order to avoid what happened on our rehearsal day, because the worst thing that could happen is that you're not able to jump. I mean, you know, if we had to, like, stay another day to wait for good weather, I think it would have been an absolute logistical disaster.
Yeah, there's a lot of promotion, all this money and all these resources built into this one time that the whole world was waiting for this to happen. It was promoted like crazy. So, you know, Dan had to have a real heart-to-heart with Will about adjusting his schedule and kind of reframing his expectation of the day. But Dan is a fantastic salesman, obviously, and it worked out great. It was Will survived. When you work with Will Smith, you get the best in the world. Right, so from the one of the world's best live TV directors, Michael Bay's helicopter and aerial cinematographer team, we had custom made bungee cords made for Will Smith by one of the premier bungee jumping companies in the world. So nothing was left to chance. He had his own personal doctor, his own personal physician.
His personal physician who was drug testing every member of the stunt crew the morning of the jump. I mean, this was a tip-top operation, you know? I mean, you don't let anybody go bungee jump out of a helicopter without obviously doing all of your standard security preparation. But when you're talking about a multi-million dollar movie star, it gets rammed. You know, it's almost like a Secret Service detail. I imagine it's what it's like when the president goes through somewhere.
17 million views in less than 24 hours. Did that change like what your outlook looked like as far as your career?
Yeah, we kind of knew almost immediately. I think so that night, you know, after, you know, we'll land, it was a great success. We all go back to the hotel at Flagstaff. I'm feeling good. And we go out for dinner and a couple drinks. And, you know, the next morning we're at the airport restaurant waiting for our flight to take off. And I'm like, Dan, you know, like it's awesome. Last night I was on, you know, I was watching TV in my room and I saw on CNN they had our footage, you know, showcasing Will Smith's jump. And then Dan says, well, yeah, my dad was in Tel Aviv in Israel and he saw it live on the news in Israel. And then we look over and the table next to us, we overhear them talking about they had just seen Will Smith jump out of a helicopter. And we're like, we have to tell them, oh, by the way, that was us. Like, we just did that. So, like, we realized.
We didn't have to tell them. Eric chose to tell them.
I felt compelled.
I was quite satisfied just knowing that they were talking about it. Eric wanted to let them know that that was actually
exactly.
us who did that.
But I think we knew, basically, immediately, this was a bit of a game changer and something that the whole world had seen. And it's been fantastic for us ever since.
There are highs like you have with Katy Perry, with Will Smith, but there are also lows where, you know, you're not necessarily working or, you know, waiting for the next project to line up. Do you guys still kind of experience that or fear that?
I think you're always to be aware of that. I think there are no guarantees in life, and especially not in the media business. There's a lot of change happening. There's acquisitions, mergers, upheavals happening on a daily basis. We hear of production companies shutting down. I think the challenge is to diversify your revenue streams as much as possible. So, like, you know, we have expertise in branded content, in digital, in live streams, in live events. So we try to be as diverse and nimble as possible. We have very, very low costs. You know, part of what makes us success is that we don't try to bloat ourselves and burn money where it's not absolutely necessary. But listen, life is full of uncertainties.
Sort of like an animal that can slow down its heartbeat.
Exactly.
But no, you know, also, we obviously are aware, but I mean, speaking personally, I don't focus on any lows or worries about failure. And when things do slow down, we take advantage of that time to, you know, work on our website or work on our development slate. You know, there's always ways to be productive when you're, you know, running your own company. The rewards are not always immediate. I often make the analogy to farming. It is a lot like planting seeds and waiting for them to grow. So what you do when you're waiting for them to grow is you plant more seeds. And so that's what we do. These days we're pretty busy most of the time, knock on wood. But that's one thing about the difference between owning your own business and just being a freelancer. When you're just a freelancer, there's only really so much you can do when you have extra time. You know, you can update your website or your reel or your resume. You can email your contacts, and that's about it. But when you have your own company, there's a whole list of sort of housekeeping or chores that you can be doing, from updating your actual physical office to working on your team's social media, to a development slate where you're trying to create new programs and sell them. So certainly we don't wait for the next big show. We try to create our own opportunities.
How do you guys define your leadership philosophy when you're working with teams that you're hiring out or putting together?
We're very selective in who we hire. I think we want to hire the best, and I think we always try to find that added value that everybody brings. It's like there's 1,000 people that can come in and write, but what other skills do you have? You know, even like if you're going to hire someone, like what other skills do they bring to the table? Like, are they also an animator on the side? Are they super knowledgeable about X, Y, or Z? What else can they have that can they bring to the table that will raise the value of their performance and also the overall product?
I always have my eyes on talent as far as, you know, in our production field. So anytime I work with anybody that I think is talented, you know, we're trying to work with them again as quickly as possible and build a relationship. And, you know, that's why you'll see a lot of the same people on project to project, because, we understand that as leaders, you can only do so much. Ultimately, you have to rely on other people to execute some of your vision. And so you're only as good as the people that you hire to execute for you. So we pay a lot of attention to that, and we try to treat people that we value. We treat everybody well and with respect and all that, but people that we really like, we try to make sure they know it, and we try to, you know, take care of them.
One thing that is so crucial in the hiring process also is expertise. Like we do pay for expertise. If there are areas, if we're doing a production that we're like, you know what, we haven't done something exactly like this before. Who's done something as close to this as possible, and how do we bring that talent to the fore so that we feel like we have as much insight as possible going?
You get what you pay for, man. You know, you go into a grocery shop or into Target or Walmart or whatever, and you go to an aisle, and you find the cheapest thing. It's the cheapest thing.
Yeah.
So
for a reason. Yeah.
You know, but for some reason in our industry, a lot of times people think that they can that they somehow can get something done for less than, you know, a standard industry rate, whether it's shooting, editing, writing, whatever. Mm. And we understand that, you know, if all you're doing is trying to make a margin, you're not going to be delivering the best product.
So as your careers have evolved, what have been the most important things to remember, and what are the most important things to let go of?
So one of the most important things for me, and Dan, you may have a different perspective on this, that I always remind myself of and both of us of is, in media, you're only as good as your last project, right? So everything you do, you have to make sure is fantastic because, oh, what are you working on? And if the last thing I did, was it something that I'm absolutely proud of and I can't wait to show you, then I did something wrong, right? So we want to make sure that everything we do is the absolute best that it can be, because that's you're only as good as that. And one, or, you know, I've seen people have one or two bad outings, and all of a sudden they're not getting phone calls anymore, and that's good news for us. But like, you're only as good as your last product, which is, you know, it's a challenge, but it's a good challenge. It keeps things competitive and keeps you sharp in the media business. And one thing you have to let go of, I think, is your ego. I feel like a lot of times in media, you'll see someone who, you know, may have been a very, very junior level a few weeks ago, and now they have a big position somewhere. Or we've had a position where someone we hired a month prior, they're now reviewing a pitch because they got landed a network job somewhere. We're not pitching them. And as long as you accept that and you treat everyone with respect, it's fine. But if you can't handle that, you're in trouble, because you're gonna face that sooner or later in the media business. And it's part of the game, and it's fine. Just don't get freaked out. Don't let your ego get the better of you.
Your ego, as Marcellus Wallace said, never helps. It only hurts. You have to suppress your ego, whether it comes to client outreach and, you know, someone's ignored a couple of emails, talent or a client doesn't like something you've written or edited, or maybe someone's just being rude. You know, I mean, if you're rude to me in my personal life, that, you know, we'll deal with that in a different way. But in professional life, like, go ahead, be rude to me. You're not going to get me to crack, because, I'm not going to let my ego interfere with our career, our path, and our projects.
And we're out pitching shows, and the pitching game is very challenging. You put a lot of resources in, time, money, and effort, and not every pitch goes, and you have to just accept that. Some of them do go. When they do go, it's fantastic. But like, if you get, you know, freaked out about rejection or not getting, you know, 100% hit rate on your pitches, you're in the wrong game. That's just not how this business works.
100%. I mean, even the most successful outfit is going to have more no's than yeses.
Mm. Yeah.
So yeah, but I mean, that, you know, that's a great lesson for everybody in any field, that, you know, your ego is usually not working for you; it's working against you.
Yeah, can only hold you back sometimes.
That's some deep Kabbalah stuff. Mm. I don't know if you ever studied.
I'm gonna meditate on this.
There's a book, The Power of Kabbalah. I think Yehuda Berg. It's a very good read. 120 pages or so.
Okay, short one. All right.
In that case,
something I don't have to cut too much time away from.
Maybe we'll talk about our favorite books and whatnot on the next podcast.
Next podcast for sure. Eric Conti, Dan Weinrich, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having us.
That's our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. How Success Happens comes out every week. To catch each episode, subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Like, share, and leave us a review so that we can always be improving. Go to entrepreneur.com for this show and other great podcasts. That's entrepreneur.com.